Welcome to the Natural Running Network. We are brought to you by MedHab, makers of RPM Squared, an innovative system of gait analysis that slips right into your running shoes. My name is Richard Diaz. I am your host. Are you a runner? Do you love to get out and challenge yourself? Running your first marathon or maybe caught the bug of obstacle racing? Well, sit tight because this is a show you just don't want to miss. I've got the great pleasure once again to have Jim Vance, who is an elite coach, and I guess you're the revolutionary on the concept of running with power, the holy grail of tracking metrics while we're running. And, you know, we've been back and forth with this, you and I, Jim, for a while now, and I've been waiting for the book to come out, and I finally got a chance to sit down with it. And I'm really pleased to have you back, Jim.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for having me. And I'm pleased to be back. I'm pleased to have the book done.
Yeah, I'll bet you are. I'll bet you are. I mean, I know what a frustrating thing it is to try to create a book. I've had firsthand experience. I'm probably the worst. People make jokes about when my next book will come out because it took me like 9 years to write the first one. and I'm 63 now. So, I mean, I've only got so much time left on the clock. I can't. Anyway, so I just want to make this very clear. The name or the title of the book is Run With Power. It's the complete guide to power meters for running. And it was written by Jim Vance, who we have with us today.
Yeah. Last time I was on the show with you, I was still just learning everything. And I think I was in Hawaii, in Kona, in October.
Absolutely. And, yes, you were.
Yeah. And I had literally only had a power meter for a few weeks at that point. So I was still learning everything, and that was part of this. That was actually the scariest part of writing the book. It was all new technology, and I knew that if I wrote something that turned out later to not be true, that people would let me know. So I had to I was stressing and researching like crazy, and there's a lot of stuff I left out of the book because I just I was like, I don't know if I'm ready to throw this out to the world yet.
Well, you know, I get it. I totally get it. And, you know, you're taking a bullet. You're taking a bullet for the rest of us that are going to follow in your footsteps, because somebody needed to do it. Somebody needed to broach the concept of how in the heck would you take this information and apply it to running. And, well, I mean, there's obvious reasons why we would want to do this, and we're going to talk about that. But, I applaud you for jumping out there and getting after it. So I got lots of questions from a professional perspective in this whole thing, being a running coach myself. What was the biggest hurdles that you found where you were trying to make sense of the information you were gathering?
Oh, that's easy. I kept thinking like a cyclist. The table of contents that I submitted to VeloPress, the publisher, was very much followed a very similar pattern to Joe Friel's book, The Power Meter Handbook for Cyclists and Triathletes, and I was trying to follow that, and I realized I was actually even trying to read the information in a way that fit the table of contents. And obviously that wasn't working.
Right.
So I had to stop and ask myself, okay, am I writing a story that I want to write, or am I writing the story of what this really is? And I was like, okay, I've got to start from scratch and go back and look at this. Because in cycling, all anybody cares about is watts. But in running, it's not necessarily even about watts. Watts just enhances the metric of pace. So it became, you know, it made a total new mindset for me in the way that I needed to approach this. So that was the biggest challenge to overcome, really stop thinking like a cyclist and trying to fit this square peg into a round hole. So once I did that, and I really started, then the creative parts of me really started, you know, started to come out, and wow, I wonder if I can learn this about it. I wonder if I can learn that about it. And so, like I said, there's a lot of stuff I didn't even put in the book that I think down the road will be, will be useful. But certainly these were the key points, and I was really excited to learn them.
Good. Now, we talked about this a little bit ago. I guess it's worth bringing it up. Now, so I'm a heart rate guy. You know, people want to call me a heart rate guy. I guess they do that because I do testing. But I try to correct people and tell them all the time that I'm really not a heart rate guy. I'm more of a data guy. I want to know what's going on. And the more information I can gather, the more effectively I'm able to coach or guide people. And so this is a very powerful metric, being able to see what yield in power you can produce relative to your cost, right? So your heart rate is a pretty good representation of cost. And I'm going to grant you that it does lag. If you're doing a sprint workout or something like that, your heart rate is going to be pretty much useless in the short term, and even a little bit of lagging behind in the recovery, where power is going to give you data that's instantaneous. It's going to tell you exactly what occurred in the moment. But it's still, I would like to believe, it's still worth hanging on to the heart rate and collecting this data simultaneously, because you have two really good comparatives when you add to it GPS, where you're looking at distance, pace, cost to work, heart rate, and power output. Now you got a whole smorgasbord of information to draw from, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, you're really getting the total picture in terms of what's happening internally, you know, in the body, and what's happening externally in terms of performance and what that ratio is. So, that's one of the things. Power just really helps to define that relationship between the effort level and the actual production of pace or speed that you're running at. So, yeah, I mean, and certainly now you start to look at heart rate with that. And now you're seeing almost three dimensions, you know. So how hard is the inside of the body working? You know, your heart, your cardiovascular system. You know, how biomechanically are you working in the sense of your power output? You know, forces applied and the speed at which you're applying. And then, okay, what is that really equating to in terms of a speed? So I think it's really giving you, you know, the full picture.
Right. Now, without going into a laundry list, I'm just curious to know, in the course of your research and in preparing to write this book up until today, how many devices have you run into that are considered capable of producing power data for a runner?
So, believe it or not, there's four that I think two that advertise. So that's RPM Squared and Stride. And there's two newer products that are out that I think will do something similar. Now, will they call it power? They're not really calling it power, but I'm seeing definitely the potential based upon what they're measuring. They could easily get a decent estimation of power from it. So it's an exciting time. I mean, you know, power meters and cycling, there really was only like one or two brands initially, and then it just exploded.
Right.
Now we've got tons of them. So, you know, I think you're probably going to see that. And you know, the real part about cycling power meters too, that was slow in their development. You know, they've been around for a long time. It's really just lately that the price has come down. But even now, your cheapest power meter is for cycling is still more expensive than the most expensive running power meter. So, you know, the barrier to entry for this for runners is certainly very inexpensive, and certainly for the cost benefit, I think it has a lot of potential. I've seen, I mean, I would say a lot of athletes, you know, Garmin's probably the most popular watch there is for runners. And most Garmins nowadays cost more than what running power meters do.
Right. Well, they do. Yeah. They get up around $600 depending on the bells and whistles, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so that's, I mean, you know, the idea that runners don't want to spend money is for these or won't do it is just not true. So I think that we'll see a much larger explosion of use of running power meters much quicker. You know, we're also in a data world. I mean, people understand and appreciate data, and certainly technology is benefiting us in every aspect of our lives. So, you know, even from heating our home, I mean, I've got a smart thermostat in my house, you know.
Right.
So the most basic things, and I think that people now are used to that, and they're not really afraid of data or numbers, especially if there's an easy way to get meaning from them. So that's really where we're at. If we can begin to get quick feedback and meaning to the data for the athlete, that's going to be probably the next thing that really helps it have a good surge in popularity and use.
Okay, so I got a couple of questions that I think might be interesting. First of all, I'm looking here where, again, this is probably you wearing your cycling hat to some degree. Where you come up with a way to find your running functional threshold power.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously enough in cycling, we do the same thing. And so you've created your down and dirty method of determining your functional threshold power by doing two time trials, essentially a 3-minute all-out effort and then a 9-minute all-out effort, and you separate the two with about 30 minutes worth of recovery.
Mm-hmm.
And then what you're doing is you take the average of the two, and I'm just quoting your book here. So it says, for example, if you did 350 watts in the 3-minute time trial, 300 watts for the 9-minute, you get an average of about 325 watts, which would be your functional threshold power. Oh, excuse me.
Yeah.
90% of that would be plus or minus 3% your functional threshold power. So mm-hmm. Here's where I'm going with the question. Now, if I didn't know anything about heart rate, I would use that, I don't want to call it a zone, let's call it a limiter, for my training. But given that I do know something about heart rate, what's the correlation, and I guess this is a question I should have asked a long time ago, what's the correlation in calories expended relative to watts?
Well, that comes out in your kilojoules, which is, you know, the total work done, you know, in energy. So since the body tends to be at a, you know, at a 4-to-1, you know, economically only at about, you know, 25%, you take your kilojoules and your kcals actually tend to line up almost equally. So, but in the book, I kind of talk about that and I address it, but I don't put much stress on in terms of kilojoules. I think the key thing that you're talking about, if you're going to use it as a limiter, is to look and say, okay, well, I'm not allowed to go out and run outside of, you know, this wattage, say my zone 3. I even created power zones based upon, I had a study, I had a number of athletes using these, and I would have them go out and do intervals, and I would have to figure out, okay, what's the percentage of their functional threshold power that they're running at these intervals. So certainly took a long time to nail that down, but, you know, that helps athletes kind of look and say, okay, well, if I'm going to go out and I'm going to, you know, I want to do marathon intensity, well, that's either zone 2 or zone 3, depending on how fast you are. So, you know, if an athlete's going out and running at zone 4, well, that's too hard. You know, they're watts. But really the big thing that I do in the book is I talk about early on, you know, I think power is great for collecting data and reviewing post-workout, you know, analysis post-workout. Not so much riding workouts based upon power.
No, I kind of get that. But I, mm-hmm. I guess where I'm going with this is that, and when I said limiter, I wasn't suggesting that you're going to do one thing. What I'm suggesting, and I'll point to it, is it's substrate utilization. How can we determine, based on the power, whether we're accessing a greater percentage of fat versus sugar? We just assume that because the intensity is less, that's the case. Because I would like to believe that as your efficiency improves, mechanical efficiency improves, your power output is going to improve relative to substrate utilization. So we'd look at the same thing when we're comparing heart rate to pace, I guess. I'm just curious how, if you kind of messed around with that type of thing, and, or whether that's even on your radar at all.
Well, you know, certainly I haven't been able to prove that zone one efforts are in power, you know, are working the exact same, you know, as zone one heart rate. I was on a little too short of a timetable from my publisher to really prove that. I mean, it makes sense. I mean, certainly I've seen that in cycling, in use of a power meter there. I've just certainly seen it in the use of heart rate monitors while running. I haven't lately coached any athletes to a marathon where I would do a lot of prescribing zone one. I'm doing a lot of retroactive, you know, post analysis to kind of see how these lined up. But you know, I haven't been able to prove that in a lab, and I don't think anybody else really has yet. I mean, that's the thing. This technology is still so new.
Well, zone one to zone one wouldn't mean much to me. I guess where it would become more of an issue is when we start talking about functional threshold power.
Sure.
We start getting in and up and around where potentially, let's just call it lactate threshold power.
Sure.
Absolutely. So, you know, how that kind of marries up and whether there's some reliability in those measurements.
Sure. So in the book, there was a second test that I also list called just a 30-minute time trial. And believe it or not, I've been using that time trial, that 30-minute test, on athletes, runners, triathletes, everything for, years. I got it from Friel, Joe Friel, and we found it to be pretty darn accurate in terms of assessing threshold heart rate, lactate threshold, and even threshold pace for an athlete.
Are we speaking of cycling or running?
This is for running.
Okay.
This is for running. So. So I've been, you know, what I found in that, I'm like, wow, well, okay, these are functional tests that really give us these types of things. Well, I started looking at what happened with power in those tests. And what I found was it was pretty darn close to the other test. So it's funny, that is one of the ways, too, that we found that also in cycling. Not obviously not with pace in cycling, but certainly with heart rate and power. So it turned out to be pretty good. The real issue and this is one of the big differences in running with power versus say cycling and power with power, your watts actually increase for most athletes as they fatigue. Now that goes to a certain point. Obviously it's not infinite, but as athletes begin to fatigue, they actually become more inefficient. They do more work, but they're not able to, or the same work, rather, but for less speed.
Right.
But what I actually found was even athletes who run very steadily paced, their watts increase. So how much do those watts increase? And then, okay, based upon that, where do you draw the line and say this is threshold watts?
Well, okay, let me ask you a question. So when you're talking about those comparatives, are they targeting pace? And then you find that in order for them to sustain pace, their watts went up?
Correct.
Okay. So then it becomes exponentially becomes more expensive to maintain the same pace, and it's showing up in their watts.
Correct. Yes. Okay.
That makes sense.
So that's why even in my, you know, when my power zones that I came up with, like threshold power, let's say you really wanted to go out and work on your lactate threshold, that type of work rate, well, then 96 to 105% of your functional threshold power is right in that range, because an athlete might start off in that test running in the high 90%, but by the end, they're well over 100% of what their threshold power is. So it's not cut and dry. I mean, if an athlete on a bike saw their watts increase as they fatigued, they'd be thrilled. So it's kind of a bit different.
Assuming that there's pace hasn't fallen off.
Correct. I should probably preface this, because people are like, it probably doesn't make a lot of sense to a lot of people. So I think this will probably help. We have three types of power. We have vertical power, up and down. We have horizontal power, forward and back. And we have lateral power, left and right, side to side. So
three-dimensional, right?
Those three dimensions. So now you have to produce some vertical power, you know, otherwise you're not running. Running is lifting the body off the ground, the feet off the ground, in order to progress forward. Well, I'm sure you as a coach, you've seen a lot of athletes who have high vertical oscillation. They just jump up. You know, they don't really go very far. Those athletes would have high vertical power, less in horizontal power. So you've got to have some vertical power. How much vertical power? Well, that depends on a lot. You know, are you running uphill? Are you running downhill? Are you running on the flat? What are you doing? You know, so you know how hard are you running? In fact, so you're going to have some vertical power, but there comes a point where vertical power is not helping you to run forward. If all we cared about was vertical power, then you would pretty much just need to jump up and down, and you would have high vertical power. So it's really about, you know, that even that relationship of vertical to horizontal power. So
right. I was going to go there with you next, incidentally, and because that's always been a consideration that I have. I measure vertical oscillation in my lab here almost daily. How do we separate the two? Is there a way that we can subtract the vertical oscillation from our forward progress?
That's where it's going to take the actual products and the data that they're sending out to be able to have different traces, you know, and say, okay, here's your vertical power, here's your horizontal power. So one of the things I've tried to do, and that's really where my speed per watt concept that I talk about in the book, which I think is the most important concept, really is designed to help them do. You know, to look at, okay, here's the speed that you're running at in meters per minute relative to the watts you're producing. So athletes can look at that and see, well, you know, if I have the same wattage, but I'm running faster, then I've got a bigger number, and that's a good thing. So it helps to kind of bring some meaning to the athletes to look at it. I call it efficiency index.
I was just going to say the same thing.
Yeah, because I think that's really what it's about. Now, I have taken some heat from some of the more scientific community that says, well, efficiency is energy in, energy out. This is not efficiency. And I said, correct. But, you know, one prominent power person calls it effectiveness, running effectiveness. And that's Dr. Andrew Coggan, who I have a lot of respect for.
Right.
And I'm like, that's great. But if I told a runner, hey, you need to be more effective, it would kind of look at me cross-eyed, like, what does that mean? But if I said, hey, you need to be more efficient this way, then now I'm speaking their language. So
it's semantics. It really is semantics. I mean, at the end of the day, in my mind, I tell people, well, not in my day to day, I tell people that there's essentially two things we concern ourselves with as an athlete, is our economy and our efficiency. And if you're pushing a lot of watts up into the air every stride you take, that's a lot of waste. If you're patting yourself on the back because you're punching out 500 watts, but all of it's going up and down, and your pace is a 10-minute mile, you got nothing, right? You're just beating yourself down or up.
Absolutely.
So I'm with you. It's like I said, it's semantics, but I guess it's interesting. So now we get this functional threshold power, and from that you've developed zones. Then you're developing training programs relative to the distances that are going to be traveled, and then where the intensity should lie in the programming, where the recovery should lie in the programming. And rather than with heart rate, it's essentially just substituted with power, right?
Yeah, I do try to tell athletes, hey, look at this relationship and try and, you know, and go out and run what you think is, say, in the half marathon training plan. Go out and run your half marathon pace and see if it lines up with the zones that correlate to that time. you know, and that goal that you have. So, because obviously the zones are based on a time range. The higher intensity the shorter you can actually be on a race course, the higher the intensity you can hold. So that even changes the zones that you'll actually train in based upon how fast of a runner you are.
Right.
So I really try and encourage people, even in the training plans, to say, you know, go out and do your thing and then learn about yourself from the power data. Don't start just saying, oh, I'm going to go out and do intervals at zone 4 power. It's like, okay, yeah, you can do that. But, you know, learn about yourself first. See what the power data tells you about your own tendencies and maybe what you can learn. So, you know, there's so much in the future. We're really just scratching the surface. But I think it's one of the key things of this might just be when an athlete goes out on a run and they realize, wow, my speed per watt number has greatly decreased. I'm working way too hard to hold this speed. Well, I'm sure at some point that's a good there's a range of that an athlete would like to know that's not beneficial. It's time to take a day off, you know, or address right. something else, or maybe an injury perhaps that's changing their gait. So those are some of the things, and we just don't know enough right now. We're still kind of learning, but it's exciting.
Well, and you touched on something that I really liked in what I was reading in respect to getting a better sense of your recovery. Mm-hmm. And when you're looking at the stress that's associated with the power output, then it becomes definitive. You can start to see, well, man, you know, this whole week, My power output is going up and my pace is falling off because I'm working my butt off to try to stick to the numbers that I set myself up for, and it's not working. So uh-huh. It's a pretty good indication that you're it's time for some recovery.
Absolutely.
So I do like that. I really like that a lot. The other thing that I looked at, when I'm full disclosure for those that are listening, I've been sponsored by RPM Squared for a while now, and I've been had my ear to the ground about the products and the technology for some time now. And one of the things that I found to be exciting about the technology is the ability to gather information about how you're making contact with the Earth and the frequency in which you're making contact with the Earth. And, you know, the RPM Square will provide that. It's going to give you a sense of the part of your foot that you're landing on. I mean, we're talking about some pretty complex things here, but try to appreciate that when I do gait analysis for people and I show them a video of them landing on their heel and they look at me like a deer in the headlights, they're shocked that they thought they were landing on their midfoot. In fact, mm-hmm. they were heel striking like crazy and overstriding, and they didn't know they were doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Simple things like that, being able to get back that type of information and then, you know, hone in on it and start to make some adjustments and correct the way you're moving. And then those are the types of things that are going to start to really show up in your yield, right? Your power output's going to improve, your pace and relative to power output is going to improve, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, and that's really the beauty of the data is, and the efficiency index metric of speed per watt is, you know, you make one small change, you're going to see a difference right away in that number,
right.
Positive or negative. Sometimes it's good to know, like, okay, no, that did not work.
Well, but I mean, I think that too, like, I'm a big fan of time trialing.
Sure.
So, for example, I got a client come in tomorrow that I'm going to do a VO2 and a gait on them. I always do the VO2 before we do the gait work. I don't want to get in their head and start messing with them in respect to the way they're moving. I just want to find out what they're bringing to me.
Sure.
And then after we've done that, I tell them first order of business is I want them to do a time trial. I want them to go out and compare the heart rate responses relative to the threshold that I've prescribed, and cover a distance and tell me how long it took you.
Mm-hmm.
Table the information. Let's go to work and let's start looking for improvements. But if you were doing it with power, this information is going to come to you all the time. It's going to be a steady stream of information that what you're doing at the moment's not working,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Especially if you've got a watch that's going to show you your pace relative to power, right?
Yep. And there's already little metrics on some of those for it. So, and with some apps and IQ, like Garmin Connect IQ app store and Suunto Moves Count, both watches that right now have that. So, yeah, all good stuff.
Now, are they functioning with the hardware you're seeing through Bluetooth?
Yeah, Bluetooth. I believe I don't know all the specifics about all of them, but yeah, for the most part, I know that RPM Squared is about to launch their ANT Plus, so that it'll work with watches and not just the phone soon. So, I know that's going to be big for them in terms of a great opportunity with the market. But Stride's unit does do that.
That's cool. That's very cool. Yeah. I wish I was a better runner. I'd go out and play with it.
I hear you.
So what's the other earth-shattering observations you gathered in the course of this research? Because I think this is fascinating. And I patted you on the back earlier. I'm going to do it again because you did. You stepped right out there and you're taking this bull by the horn, so to speak. And you're applying this interesting technology to this free-form movement. And it's tough. I mean, the technology it's not going to be easy in coming in respect to working this out because, and I guess the best terms that I can use for an analogy is that this is an open chain kinetic effort as opposed to closed chain. So being on a bike, because the wheel's always in contact with the earth, you're not dealing with vertical oscillation or all the slop that goes up and down or side to side like it does when you're running. So it's a little trickier, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, and I can tell you I've seen entirely different athlete power files of even almost the exact same course and with the opposite things happening. Athletes whose power goes up on downhills, athletes whose power decreases on downhills, athletes who, just tons of things. So it really has, it's almost like a fingerprint of an athlete in terms of what's going on, through their kinetics, their biomechanics. So it's that was probably the biggest thing. And of course, like I say, just how different it is from cycling. So that was just a new concept. Because in this, your power can go up and your power can go down, and both can be good things. So
That is really interesting.
So yeah,
and so that wouldn't be the case so much with your I guess it would too, heart rate too. Mm-hmm. if you start to notice that you're able to produce more pace with less heart rate, that's a good thing. But at the same token, being able to get your heart rate up is an indication things are probably going pretty well too.
Mm-hmm.
In some cases, right?
Yeah.
So what about the book was the part that you enjoyed the most in respect to the information? I mean, this the oh my God, this is great stuff part for you.
Oh, I'd say just understanding the zones and really, finalizing that and really being confident to say, yeah, these zones will work. I'm pretty spot on here. I think that was the key because I think athletes want that. And then the other thing, of course, was, just being able to do training plans. I know the publisher was, at first I was not confident to do that. And then as I got more research done and felt good about it, I felt like the training plans really helped kind of show where the rubber meets the road and the application of the information in the book. So being able to do that and those training plans I think will be successful for a lot of athletes in those time ranges. So, probably those were some of the most satisfying things.
Mm-hmm. As far as populations of the people that you're working with, is it the triathletes for the most part that are embracing this the most? I would think the correlation between coming off the bike with power into running with power, just the metrics are familiar, and they seem to try to draw some lines there. Is that probably right?
Sure. There's definitely that. And I also spend a lot of time in the triathlon community, so I'm approached by triathletes a lot. So, I think you're going to see more runners for sure as it goes.
Well, as I suggested to you before we started, the obstacle course racing community, they are really, really passionate about improving performance. And I believe that there's a lot of people out there listening right now that I know that have followed me for a while and I work with that have been looking at this. And, it's like gorillas in the mist, they're kind of dancing around it, not sure what to do. And just, well, if I reach out, will it bite me, Mm-hmm. And they're trying to figure it out, but what we've gleaned from the sport so far is that if you don't run well, you can't win. And that's a big deal. I mean, you got to be able to improve the way you're moving, and the more information you can get, the better. So I love it. I would love to have a client call me up one day and say, listen, by the way, in the Training Peaks account we have, I'm going to start sending you power information along with all the other metrics that we've been playing with. And that would be really fun. I probably need to shove some of these insoles in some clients' shoes and start doing it myself.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, experimentation and learning. You'll learn a lot. Trust me.
Yeah. So is there anybody else out there that's kind of chasing behind this and got your back on it or having contrary beliefs about how this works? I'm just throwing this out there. I'm just curious. Because right now you're like alone, man. You're on an oasis.
I'd say Dr. Coggan is pretty good.
Yeah.
He's still doing a lot in terms of metrics using WKO4.
Yeah.
With some great stuff. He's really taking a science approach to it, which is great. Like I say, I have a lot of respect for him and how he does it. I think, it's still such a new tool. Here's one thing. I think most of the people in that community, they're like, okay, well, I want to see trends first. I need to see proof before I start to really buy into X, Y, or Z. And so that's why I've been a very big advocate of just do your training, collect the data, then go back and look at it and see what you learned. And I think that's probably the best way for a lot of people, even those who doubt it. It's like, okay, try it and, don't commit to it. Just collect it and afterwards see if you learn anything or what you thought would happen. Maybe it didn't. So
I think that's good advice across the board. I think even with heart rate, a lot of people will, how it was back in the day. People would buy a heart rate monitor because their buddy bought one and they'd put it on for a day or two and then get frustrated with it, put it in the drawer, and never pull it back out again.
Sure.
And, I don't know if I ever told you this, but I was at Wildflower and I was representing a heart rate monitor company. And this is probably 15, 16 years ago. And my whole shtick while I was there was to survey triathletes and ask them whether they owned a heart rate monitor and whether they were going to wear it during the race. And I would say that 90% of them that I interviewed said that they owned one, and probably 5% of them actually were going to wear it during a race.
Yeah, for sure.
And, my argument was is the reason that they weren't going to wear it during the race is they just didn't understand it.
Yeah. It can be uncomfortable and things like that, yeah. I never wore one in a race. McKeely Jones one time told me a heart rate monitor can't tell me how my legs feel.
Yeah,
I'm like, well, yeah, okay, that's true, but
and I think during
once I started collecting power too, I kind of was a lot like Hunter Allen back in with him saying we're all on power now. So, but I was collecting something for sure. But
well, I just think that at the end of the day, if you're training effectively and you're gathering as much information as possible. Come race day, you got a pretty good sense of what you're capable of doing or not capable of doing, and you get a pass. You don't need to wear the chest strap. You don't, mm-hmm. I've kind of conditioned myself over the years to finally come to that conclusion.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the biggest problem was most people were just not sure what to do with the information, and when it didn't say what they would hope it was going to say, that it frustrated them. So. I mean, and so I like the approach of saying, hey, you know what? Get out there and just wear it, play with it, let it give you information, keep an eye on what's happening and learn from it. And then, as you get a little closer to the data understanding, then you start putting it to practice.
Exactly.
I think it's great. Remind me again what the other book is that you wrote. Triathlon 2.0.
Data-driven performance training.
So you skipped right over 1.0, right?
Yeah. Exactly.
Let's get right on to the people that are really trying to get this done. The 1.0s don't count.
And it's a lot of the same concepts. Power for half Ironman, Ironman athletes, and pace data and heart rate using those types of things. So
yep.
Does not cover power for running because when I wrote that, took me 4 years to write that book, so obviously I had a lot of research, and power for running wasn't even out yet.
Well, you're still young, so you got time to do that, right?
Exactly.
So then we got Run with Power 2.0 coming out in
No, run with power. 2.0. There won't be a 2.0, yeah. At least not right now. There might be. We'll see. We'll see how that one goes. Yeah, but run with power has been out since about May 1, and yeah. So, and there's an ebook out now. They just launched out. I want to say just a week or so ago. So
cool. Mm-hmm. Well, Jim, I know you got an appointment coming up, and I don't want to keep you much longer, but I really appreciate the information. I'm a fan of your work. I'm a fan of the concept of utilizing power in running. I'm a student of the art, so I'm always paying attention to this technology, and I've always been a little bit of a geek, so I like looking at this information, especially when working with clients, and I appreciate that guys like you have put this information out there for guys like me, put it to work.
Awesome. Well, thanks for having me, Richard.
It's a pleasure, man. Enjoyed it. Well, friends, it's time to bring another show to a close. Be sure and tune in to us next week. We've got a lot of great content in store for you. I want you to tell your friends to check us out. You can always find us on Facebook. Simply go search the Natural Running Network. Drop us a message. I'd love to learn more about you and the things you do. And until then, you have an amazing day.